Well, we couldn't wait for the lockdown to end. We're not back in studio, but there's too much football happening for us to stay away. You didn't think we were gone, did you? FNR, Twilight Football is back. Josh Parrish and Nick Dabano broadcasting from our virtual studio, our home studios, of course. Nick, welcome. You're looking forward to the Road to Qatar 2022, continuing tonight in a time slot that is somewhat hospitable for those of us on the east coast of Australia. What a miracle.
It is. I mean, any time slot before midnight in any league is a blessing when it's not, you know, obviously here in Australia. Or I think, you know, that's the beauty of, I guess, Asian qualifiers against Southeast Asian teams or Japanese teams. It's like the Olympics all over again, you know. It's a great time slot. But in terms of the qualification campaign in general, it is great. It's given something to look forward to during lockdown, like something, you know, just to remember what day it is, because, you know, we lose track of days very quickly at the moment. And I guess, you know, when you know that you've got something, you know, at a certain time, it gives you something to look forward to. And I can't wait for this. They were quite impressive against China. They got the job done. These have been banana skin games in the past. And tonight is another one. This is going to be a real test for Socceroos, heading over to Vietnam, playing in Hanoi in quite difficult conditions, Josh. But we do know that difficult conditions of the Socceroos has kind of gone hand in hand to so far in this World Cup qualification campaign. Nothing has been ideal for them. So this will be a really interesting test for Graham Arnold's side.
Well, Nick, you've been following along the sort of virtual press tour for this qualification campaign. Speaking of the conditions, there are a few amphibious friends that joined training, I understand.
Yeah, well, they had their first run around in Hanoi on Sunday evening, it would have been now. So they jetted over from Doha to Hanoi, got out there, got a bit of a feel for the humidity. You go from the searing heat in the Middle East to, you know, the stickiness of Southeast Asia. And for those that have been to Southeast Asia, you know that it might be on the temperature, you know, like a 35 degree plus day, but even when it's humid, it's a different kind of humid. And they got out in the park and there were frogs. And Arnie said it was, you know, it was a bit of a boost for the squad, a bit of a morale boost, a bit of a laugh, just to kind of go, well, this is it. This is the beauty of World Cup qualifiers. Anything can happen. And yes, they were joined by some frogs out on the pitch. But they're going to be joined by some interesting elements tonight. Apparently, well, the last time I checked the forecast, it was supposed to thunderstorm during the game. So God knows what will happen if it does. And it's going to be, I think, a top of 27 during the game as well. So it's not going to be ideal at all. So it'll be interesting to see how this game sort of plays out in terms of the structure of the game. We're going to get water breaks, et cetera, et cetera. It's all those other logistics we don't have to worry about. But can't wait for it. This is going to be a really, really fun game.
Frogs definitely need water breaks, so they have to keep that in mind.
Yeah, 100%.
If you ever handle a frog, if one ever makes it into your house, make sure you wet your hands first. You know, that's just basic environmental care. Look, what are you expecting to see tonight based on the performance against China? It was very comfortable in regards to the scoreline. How did you rate that performance, and what are you expecting to see from the Socceroos in obviously these sticky, heavy, humid conditions?
Well, I'm expecting to see a lot of the same. They're going to be on the front foot. They're going to have a lot of the ball. I think it's going to be interesting to see how it goes, because Vietnam, we saw they gave Saudi Arabia a lot of trouble. They took the lead. And before they went down to 10 men, they were in control. And then Saudi Arabia just sort of were able to put their foot down. But they're going to play off the break and they're going to make it hard. So it's going to be intriguing to see if Arnie looks to change things, because you're going to need guys that are going to be able to pick a final ball. Players are going to be able to run at defences and try and open up gaps for other players. So I'd be intrigued if maybe he starts Aaron Moy, or if he looks to change the midfield composition, which I think was actually pretty good against China. I thought that midfield three functioned really well with Aiden Krustic in the squad, but Martin Boyle might be the one absentee. So if he's out, do they go to Daniel Arzani? I'd love to see Daniel Arzani start the game, or do they look to go maybe with a bit of a different setup? There's Krustic, who can play out wide, potentially slot out there. They haven't really got a deep arsenal of attacking players, which I think was partly due to a lot of their attacking options being Australian-based. So guys like Akotamidis, Lecky, Jamie McLaren, etc. You don't really have the same options that you might have had in normal times. So I think that's a bit of a headache that Arnie has to work through. And he did say he's not going to play Martin Boyle if he doesn't have to, because end of the day, it is one qualifier. You know, you don't want to re-aggravate this injury. He's had a lot of injury problems in the past as well. And we know it was just a bit of a tight hammy, but tight hammies can become something a lot serious. And when you get a hammy, you know, he could be on the sidelines for quite some time. And I don't think Jack Ross, the manager, would be too happy if Martin Boyle, their informed man, comes back. And I think they've got a derby straight afterwards, and he's not available for that. So top of the table, he would definitely not be happy if Martin Boyle misses. But in terms of the game, it'll be interesting to see how they sort of deal with a team that's going to just, you know, put numbers behind the ball and look to frustrate.
Yeah, lots of good points to jump on there. Also, in news for the viewers, we are now more interactive than ever. I've managed to get my hands on a program that collates all the live stream comments from all of the platforms that we stream on. And reminder, we are on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and Twitch, which we encourage you to watch on Twitch because there's a shorter delay. The video quality is a lot better. It's the best place to watch us live. And on Twitch, Sardines come through with some frog tips. He says, if a frog comes into your house, wet your hands, put the stove on medium, flat pan, knob of butter, clove of garlic, and away you go. Didn't know you were French, Sardine, but the more we learn about each other, the more interesting it becomes. And a bit more of a serious comment, Robert Shimolnoki, I've definitely butchered that name, apologize, but he says, needs Arzani to start tonight, and Rogic and Hrustic in the middle of the park, as they are the glue that holds the team together. What do you make of those comments from Rob?
Well, Tom Rogic is certainly someone to keep an eye on. I mean, he's been in brilliant form for Celtic, and he looks quite good. You know, he looks really good against China. It's great to have him in there. He's easily Australia's probably most dynamic sort of attacking midfield player in that role. And I think Australia are a lot better when Rogic is in the team. Aiden Hrustic, though, he's a baller, man. Like, he's a very, very talented player. And
versatile, too. More versatile than I realised.
Absolutely. Like, he can play out wide. He can play as a 10. He can play deep. I think it's better if he's playing deep because you can sort of utilise Rogic further up and, you know, sort of get him back behind the ball. And I think his range of passing is brilliant. He's a great set-piece taker as well. He's got the full, sort of the full kit and caboodle. And his form for Eintracht Frankfurt in the Bundesliga is just as impressive. So in terms of the glue of the squad, I think definitely in this qualification campaign, they're going to be really key players. And if Australia going to advance in this group, and so far results have been quite favourable with Japan dropping points. So I tell you what, like if they're able to just able to sort of get through these big games now, get the points on the board, we know how important it is just to get the points on the board. We don't want to have to go the long way. And if you go the long way in the AFC qualifiers, it is a hell of a time. We remember what happened heading into 2018, you know, playing Syria and surviving by the lick of a goalpost and, you know, and then having to go and play on a cow paddock in Honduras. So
yeah, don't want to visit the murder capital of the world again.
No, prefer not to. We would rather not. We'd rather not have to play. Are we going up against CONCACAF again, probably? And that's looking like the big Yanks.
I've tried not to think about it. I've tried to banish those playoff memories from my mind. I was given an untimely reminder of Iran 97 the other day as Ronaldo surpassed Ali Daei's goal-scoring record, who, of course, scored at the MCG in 97. Trigger warning for everybody who actually remembers that game. But we'll get through to all those listener comments on the other side of this break. We've also got, excitingly, ESPN Journal and friend of the station, Joey Lynch, joining us to talk through this one. And we're not just talking Socceroos. Later on in the program, we're going to talk a little bit about the other international football going on in the window. And also, I've got a few things to get off my chest about the null and void NPL Victoria season. So stick around to the end of the show for some of that here on Twilight Football on FNR. Back on Twilight Football here on FNR Football Nation Radio, and we're delighted to be joined by a friend of the station and ESPN Jono, Joey Lynch, once again. Joey, how's lockdown treating you? How are you going?
Every day is a blur, and every waking hour is an immense sea of nothingness.
So it's nice to have some events to mark the time, and having a Socceroos game kick off at 10 p.m. for me is incredibly welcome news. How have you been preparing, swatting up for this one?
Well, I've restarted on the coffees at about 5 p.m. So that's been getting good. So I'll have the coffees. I'll get my workout of the day in. I'll construct my own home gym. And then on more coffees, I'll try to write at least half my copy before kickoff actually starts.
Oh, this is the insight. Peek behind the curtain.
I'm filing for both ESPN and The Guardian tonight, so I need to be a bit pre-prepared.
Not to mention appearing on FNR's Watch Along stream at the same time. So the king of multitasking, Joey Lynch. What did you make of the China game, the 3-0 win, the performance, and what are you hoping to see from the Socceroos tonight?
I wrote this in my review of the game, that it was a comprehensive win, and it was so comprehensive that it's difficult to have any concrete takeaways from it if you are looking at the Socceroos. Did they play well, or were China really that bad? It's probably, I think, a combination of them, the two. The Australians, looking at that lineup that Graham Arnold threw out against China, it is, in a way, probably as close to, as you call it, optimal or functional that the Socceroos possibly could have thrown out, both in that scenario and just perhaps period, maybe with a few tinkers around the edges. So perhaps we shouldn't take too much away from the Socceroos. Maybe that is just what we can expect from a side laid out like that, coming up against opposition. But same time, outside of maybe 10, 15 minutes at the start, China, very bad. Nowhere, probably a lot weaker than most would have been expecting. China, one of these countries that flatter to deceive when it comes to international football. You'd think just with how many people they have, they'd be able to find 11 blokes that could kick a ball around the field well, but apparently not, despite all the investment that's been poured into their national side in recent years and their league. So coming out of it, I think difficult to tell, you know, too much until we've seen the game tonight. But then again, Vietnam, ostensibly the lowest ranked side that the Socceroos will be playing in this phase of qualification. So, yes, I know it's a big meme and all that, you know, Australia doesn't respect Asia and all of that and looks past Southeast Asian nations. But no, this is a game that the Socceroos should, dare I use the word, expect to win.
I knew it was coming.
coming up against a side with the world ranking of Vietnam. We've seen Vietnam strengthening youth levels, famously defeating Australia's under 23 side a few years ago, but it's not translated to senior level yet. So should be a game the Socceroos win, but they don't play these games on paper.
You want to jump in, Nick?
Yeah, I mean, Joey, we've seen in the past how many times the Socceroos have kind of struggled against teams that sit back and like to frustrate. I think mine goes straight back to the Asian Cup and thinking about all those times where they were unable to find that final ball. I guess, are you at all a bit more encouraged? Because against China, look, they tried to kind of sit back. I know defensively they weren't great, but I mean, Vietnam, for the most part against Saudi Arabia, they were able to hold it together till they got a red card. Are you at all concerned about that they are taking on a team that are going to put numbers behind the ball and potentially look to frustrate?
Well, it is inevitable that I think they will put numbers behind the ball. Graham Arnold said as much in his pre-game press conference that he's expecting, without the ball, this Vietnamese side to revert to a 5-4-1, try to defend in numbers. And I think Vietnam, they were able to hold it together against the Saudis, as you said, until the red card. But the dynamics of that game kind of did set Vietnam up to do that very well. They took a 1-0 lead within 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. That massively changes the dynamics of the game. It's a lot easier to sit back and defend when you do have that early one-goal lead and make the opposition come to them and potentially hit them on the counter, which is what Vietnam likes to do. Coming up against this, we know that they will sit back and try to play on the counter again, but is there perhaps a bit more impetus for the Vietnamese to maybe come out of their shells a little bit in this game? It is their first ever home World Cup fixture at this stage of qualification. It's their first ever senior international with Australia. in Vietnam's modern form. Of course, historians know about Australia going to Vietnam and playing in the past, but geopolitics and the like, this form of Vietnam has never played Australia in a senior international before. Is there perhaps an impetus for the Vietnamese to maybe make a statement, a home qualifier against a big nation? If you are going to take points off them, you're going to do so at home versus be it in Australia or in the Middle East. We don't know what's happening with that yet. So it is inevitable that I reckon Vietnam will cede most possession to the Socceroos. The extent that they do so will vary, will depend highly upon the way the game unfolds. Do the Socceroos score relatively early like they did against the Chinese, 2 goals in 2 minutes? That completely changed the game. If that happens again, do we see Vietnam come out? Or perhaps do we see like what I think China did when they went down 2-0? They kind of decided, right, we'll just protect the goal difference at this point. Let's not ship 4 or 5 or 6 goals and completely torpedo our goal difference in game one. So a lot of questions. It will depend highly on the situational questions as the game arises, I reckon.
Let me put an argument to you, Joey. I think to get a result in this match, Vietnam cannot sit back. They have to cede possession, maybe, but press the Socceroos at least intensely in a mid block. Because if they sit back on the edge of their own box and allow corners and free kicks to be conceded and crosses to be slung in, there is just a physical disadvantage in the area, and the Socceroos will score a header. I mean, most of the Vietnamese previews that I've seen of this game have focused on Harry Suter as the main attacking threat. So I'm huge on this Vietnamese side. I think they're full of talent, and you know, I've been so excited about them ever since they had that tremendous run in the under-23 tournament in, I think, 2018, where they got to the final on home soil and then had a good showing the next year in the Asian Cup. Lots of talented players, but there's just a serious physical disadvantage, and I think if they sit back, they're going to pay the price.
I mean, probably. I guess it depends on when you're saying if they want a result. It depends what sort of result they want. If they want to win, they absolutely have to do that. But we have seen, especially in international football, conservatism can tend to ring out amongst these coaches. And
this coach in particular can be very pragmatic, very conservative, the Korean that they've got in charge.
Yeah, Park Hang-seo. Yeah. Does he just come out and say, listen, if we are going to somehow jag a miracle and get through, the way that we're going to do it is we're going to sit back, we're going to take points off Japan, Saudi Arabia, Australia, and we're going to try to be the best of the rest and feast upon the lower ranked sides in the group, which, you know, ostensibly from a completely neutral perspective, removed of any other context, probably is the most pragmatic approach for a nation like Vietnam. But you're saying again that not games are always played with context. And you are right in the sense that we have seen this Socceroos side maybe get a bit of stage fright at times when people have put it right up them. So it will be interesting to see what happens. Of course, at the same time, that might end up just playing into the Socceroos' hands. If they don't have a giant block up there, the midfield, which we saw against China, can be quite functional in its current form. Could just play right through them. Taggart, if he starts, his movement with Awa Mabil and Martin Boyle, who I don't think will start, really play havoc with the Chinese defensive setup. So a lot of questions. And we saw, I mean, if Vietnam do come out, Trent Sainsbury's willing to just ping a ball over the top and absolutely hurt them.
I mean, you mentioned Martin Boyle not playing, and we need someone who's actually going to be able to take it to him, like take it to those defenders. I know you've got high stocks in Daniel Arzani. You've bought them, you've kept them, you haven't sold them.
Mate, I was I was watching him play on, you know, NPL 2 football.
Joey's like a day one Bitcoin investor in Arzani. Yeah. It's taken a little dip, but he's kept the faith.
Yeah, but all right. So obviously in talking about that, would you be looking at potentially giving him a start, or would he be someone you'd be looking at a little bit later in the game? Because we saw what he can do. And I mean, this game almost suits that sort of play. You want someone who's going to be able to try to take on bodies and create some havoc.
I think I'd be leaning towards bringing him on as a substitute purely because, one, I think he is unfairly beaten over the head with it, but there are concerns around conditioning. In his pregame press conference yesterday, Arnold did talk about by the end of the Olympics campaign, he was getting a bit fatigued. So especially in the humidity and heat of Vietnam, where a fitness will be king. Maybe he's someone you want to bring off the bench and have him running at tired defenders. You know, in Vietnam, they're chasing the game, or perhaps they're batting down the hatches trying to defend a one-goal lead, or perhaps defend a draw, and then you bring on someone like Arzani that is just going to come at them. I think that is really valuable, and I think that has a place. We, you know, beat Arzani over there. Oh, he can't run out 90 minutes. Who says he has to? Only 11 players start. It's a 27-player squad. Only 11 of them get to start. You know, maybe you don't need 23 once we remove the goalkeepers, players that can run like the Terminator. Maybe we need some different things. So that is a use of his skills. I think also takes the pressure off him a little bit, because we have to remember he hasn't pulled on a Socceroos shirt and played a senior game since the World Cup in Russia. It's a long time ago. Expecting him to go out and be the key weapon in his first game back may be a bridge too far. But I certainly think that should Arnold wish to give it to him, he can do a job and play a role. Who knows? Maybe we have a situation wherein Arnold decides that he wants to have somebody like really running in that position. Maybe, you know, he talked about maybe he brings Duke on and plays Duke out wide, which he can do. Maybe he puts someone like Riley McGree out there who can run all day and really go at oppositions and mix it up that way. Maybe he brings Moy into the starting lineup and moves Hristich forward. Maybe he brings Genro into the starting lineup, who has a lot of experience playing in Southeast Asia, and moves Hristich forward. So he does have options, one of whom is Arzani, who I think is a fantastic option. But if it was up to me, I'd be bringing him on sort of in his Russian role as a super sub, game breaker, no pressure, go out there, do your thing. Because when you're going out there and you're doing your thing, that is when you're at your most lethal.
Well, it's already dividing opinion in the comment section. Robert says Arzani should start because if we score first, the game will be so much easier. Tony Pasoglia says, based on the Olympics, Arzani has 45 good minutes in the tank. Best bet is an impact off the bench sometime in the second half, which is basically echoing your thoughts. I think it's a fantastic conundrum as to who comes in for Boyle and whether the midfield pairing is broken up, because, of course, Hristich could be a victim of his own versatility in that he can be feature on the right and cut in. He can play as a 10. He can feature in the double pivot as he has for Eintracht Frankfurt and as he did against China. What would be your call if you're standing in the Socceroos dugout, Joey? I mean, Moy is waiting in the wings if you want to bring him in. There's Genro. There's so many options. Which one are you plumbing for?
I mean, I'm incredibly biased, so I'd be starting Genro. But what I think...
and Hristich out to the right?
Yeah, I think what I think Graham Arnold will want to do is, I think he'll want to bring Aaron Moy in, play him in as part of that double pivot next to Jackson Irvine, keep Tom Rogic ahead of them, because Rogic was fantastic against China, and against an opposition like Vietnam, you need somebody with his ability to actually instigate play and instigate attacks. And I think he will put Hristich out onto the right, because I think you're talking about Hristich being a victim of success. He can play everywhere, but he is successful in the point now that we are speaking about Hristich as an almost must start for the Socceroos in some role. He has, from a bloke that, you know, was on the periphery for so many years and really only burst into the fore in the June qualifiers, he has rapidly become one of these players that we want to see on the team sheet in some capacity in every single game. So he does. That's what I would do. What I would do is incredibly heavily biased by my own personal preferences, but trying to put myself in the shoes of Graham Arnold, adopt the Arnie Ball mindset, that is what I would do if I was Graham Arnold.
Yeah, with Hristich, it's becoming less about where he plays and more about whether he plays. And he has to, because he's the only Socceroo playing in a top five European league on a regular basis at the moment. I mean, Matt Ryan hopefully will be the first choice keeper at La Real when he comes back from, he's back from injury, but when he comes back from injury at club level. But, you know, so far this season, Hristich is the only player playing at that level. So you could make an argument he's the best player in the team at the moment.
Possibly, yeah. I mean,
Simo Rogic, I guess.
Rogic, yeah, would be up there. Yeah, possibly. I mean, Martin Boyle's scoring for fun with Hibs, so one imagines that if he wins the Golden Boot in Scotland, that might be worth a move to a mid to lower table Premiership side or something like that. And I think Dennis Genreau is on the books at Toulouse, who is running away with the French second division. So it looks like he might be, promoted to the Uber Eats League, which is still nominally one of the big leagues in Europe. But you are right in the sense that Hristich playing week in and week out in the Bundesliga, a Bundesliga whose characteristics, pace and power, somewhat sort of matches what Australian national teams try to do on a national level. So he does loom as he, by the time Qatar 2022 rolls around, assuming that the Socceroos qualify for that, he probably does loom as the first or second name on the team sheet when that tournament does roll around, if he is able to continue to play the way he is at the moment.
I mean, the squad is pretty fit. Would you be changing anything else, or would you be going back again? Because obviously it isn't like a full week turnaround. They've gone from playing in Doha, albeit air-conditioned stadium and everything, but playing in the humidity. Would you be looking at changing something? We know Aziz Bayich hasn't played a lot. Would you be maybe giving Callum Alder the start, changing something else? Like, how do you see it?
I think I'm basing this off what Graham Arnold said in his pre-game press conference. I don't think any rotations that we see in this game will be done at the behest of keeping players fresh or fitness. Graham Arnold basically came out and said, no, I am playing, these are World Cup qualifiers, I am playing my best 11.
This round.
Yeah. So from that, we can infer that starting 11 he put out against China is what, in terms of what is currently available to him, you know, A-League players not available at the moment. You'd think Matthew Leckie would probably be leading the line. Perhaps if he was available, maybe Jamie McLaren, we don't know. But given what is available to Graham Arnold, that starting 11 against China, fresh out the gate, no worries about fitness, no worries about injuries, that side was what Graham Arnold considers to be his best 11. From that, we know, and taking Graham Arnold at his word, that he's just going to put out his best 11 for every single game, we probably know 10 or 11 players on the team sheet going into every single game. It's just a question of fitness and potentially changing things around for an opposition after that. Although I don't, once again, all due respect to Vietnam, but they are the lowest ranked team in the group. One would think there would be special game plans in place for your Saudi Arabians and your Japans, not Vietnam.
Should we be game planning for any of the Vietnam players individually, though? Because I'm a little bit worried about Nguyen Quang Hai, who is an extremely gifted playmaker, low centre of gravity, really strong on the ball, great left foot, and he scored a cracking goal against Saudi Arabia, and they weren't able to hold on to that lead. But he's been a shining light for many, many years. Their key central defender is under an injury cloud, or rumoured to be, and we're not sure if he's going to play. But is there anyone in the Vietnamese side that you'd be looking out for as a potential threat that has to be given special attention?
I mean, I would have said Quang Hai as well. I did a preview piece for this game with Gabriel Tan of ESPN, who works in Asia and follows Vietnam closely. And that was the man that he identified as the danger player. But the benefit, in terms of we're talking about game planning and zeroing in on certain players, Arnold said himself yesterday, he's been sitting on his own in a hotel in Dubai for the past month with nothing to do but watch China and Vietnam play football. So I think often in times in international football, you don't get a lot of prep time. Things are, the players get thrown together very quickly, not enough time to game plan, all of that sort of stuff. Arnold has had, you get coaches who have to fly around, watch their players play in person. Arnold's had none of that. Arnold has not been in Europe watching his players play. He's certainly not been back home, taking, at this point, we'd have to call it a much deserved rest. The bloke's been living out of a suitcase since May, for God's sake. But he's been sitting in a hotel room. Time difference means he can't really catch up with family or friends. he's had football to watch. He'll have been watching Vietnam. So if there is a player that the Australians should be game planning around, you've mentioned Quang Hai, I've mentioned him, Gabriel Tan mentioned him. If a player like that goes gangbusters and should have been keyed in on, Arnold's got nobody to blame but himself.
I'm just imagining the reams and reams of videotape strewn around in the hotel room and sort of Bielsa-style PowerPoint presentations being prepared. Because, you know, there's no excuse to not be prepared for this match when you've had so much lead-in time. And it's the reason I'm so excited about it, because I think we've got a chance to see two teams with potentially cohesive game plans in international football, which isn't always the case. And Vietnam's an interesting case given that so many of their players come from their domestic league. They've got very few players playing overseas. I read something about the ridiculously long contracts they're almost forced to sign with their clubs as a reason why some of them haven't jetted off to the J-League or wherever. That might be, you know, what's stopping an A-League team going out and signing a Quang Hai from Hanoi FC or whatever. But there's an element of continuity amongst the Vietnamese team that I think gives them a little bit more than their reputation would suggest outside of the country.
I would say, though, that continuity, the fact that they all play in the Vietnamese domestic league, that also could work against them when it comes to into their fitness for this game. Sure. The V-League has been on hiatus since the start of May because of the COVID-19 pandemic. And adrenaline is inevitably going to play a factor in this. First, no fans in the stands, unfortunately, but first-time World Cup qualifier at this stage, big game against a big nation like Australia. Adrenaline will be running high, but coming off 90 minutes against the Saudis, it was in Raida, I think the game was. So difficult conditions themselves in Raida. How long are the Vietnamese going to be able to ride that wave of momentum when so much of the squad hasn't been playing regular club football since May? Admittedly, leagues starting around the world, not a lot of Australian players have been playing much club football either, but they've been playing more than the Vietnamese. So that is a question, particularly if, as we've been talking about, in these hot and humid conditions, which no doubt the Vietnamese are more used to than the Australians, but in these hot and humid conditions, if the Vietnamese find themselves chasing the ball for almost the entire 90 minutes, that is going to play, you know, my lungs are shot to begin with. But if you, even if you were fully healthy, that would play havoc with any side of any fitness level, you know, let alone one who's the majority of their squad has had their league suspended since May.
Hey, I wonder if humidity's been banned as well. We heard the word heat was banned a while ago. I wonder if humidity is now part of the lexicon that's been banned. Before we let you go, Joey, go on a limb. What's the score? Who's winning?
I hate doing these.
and this is great because when it's podcasted, by the time it's podcasted, everyone will know what's happened, so they'll be able to instantly judge your prediction.
All right,
we'll go out on a limb as well. We'll give ours.
Yeah. Australia 3, Vietnam 1. It'll be 1-1, and then Australia will get 2 second half goals.
Goal scorers?
Tom Rogic, Awa Mabil double.
Nice.
All right, Nick, you go.
Australia 1-0, just a boring 1-0 win, I reckon. I just have this bad feeling about tonight. It's going to be a real, like, just smash and grab. And I'm going to say goal coming from Aiden Hrustic.
Nice. All right, I'm going to say Harry Suter is definitely scoring in this game. And it's going to finish 2-0 Vietnam, despite how impressed I was with him in 2019, I think might pay as a result of their fitness and as a result of their conservatism of their manager, who's very well organised, but sitting back against Australia, I just don't think they're going to be able to hold out. So I'll say a Suter header and an Adam Taggart goal for me. All right, Joey, as always, absolute pleasure. We'll catch up with you later during the watch-along and watch-along stream kicking off as the game does at 10 p.m. That's always great fun. It's just sort of a live discussion, reaction, meandering, sidetracking extravaganza. So make sure you join us for that. It's your second screen experience while you're watching Socceroos play against Vietnam tonight. But, of course, you can read Joey Lynch's piece after the game in which publications was it again?
You can read, I'll get all my plugs in at this point. You can read my post-game analysis of Australia versus Vietnam in both ESPN Australia and New Zealand and The Guardian. Australia. You can catch all of my work across many publications. Just follow me on Twitter or follow my website. You can follow up with that. I'd encourage everybody to get around the podcast that I host and produce, Beyond the Lead from ESPN. New episode just dropped today. Half an hour conversation with Executive Director of the World Players Association, Brendan Schwab. We had a good chat about athlete activism, protesting at the Olympics, human rights connotations of the coming Beijing Winter Olympics and Qatar World Cup, Afghanistan, protecting female athletes around the world from sexual abuse and gender-based violence, COVID, sport and COVID, and potential mandatory vaccinations for athletes. So that's a good chat. Make sure you get around that. And also, personal plug, video viewers of the podcast will see my virtual background. For those listening on the podcast, I have as my background the sushi bandana design for Canteen Australia. Canteen Australia's National Bandana Day will be the last Friday in October, the annual event raising funds to support Canteen in its mission to ensure that no young person aged 12 to 25 goes through cancer alone, be they a patient, offspring or a sibling. So get around that if you can.
All right. And I'll tell you what, Joey, I'm going to make sure that we wear bandanas on FNR all week during that week. I reckon we can get around that. Joey Lynch, as always, an absolute pleasure. We'll catch you tonight. Enjoy the game.
See you then, boys.
All right, we'll take a break here. On the other side, we've got a bit of a chat about the other international football going on in the window. And I'm going to give my thoughts on the cancellation and null and void NPL Victoria season, which was unfortunately inevitably confirmed this week. Twilight Football, FNR Football Nation Radio. If you missed our chat with ESPN's Joey Lynch, you can catch that on our podcast platforms. It'll be up very shortly after we finish the show and after I get a chance to edit it. So, look, does that podcast have much shelf life? No, the game's happening at 10 p.m. tonight. But if you missed it, you're probably your best bet is just to rewind the live stream, if I'm honest. Nick DiBarno's with me, and we've been taking a bit of an interest in the international window. It's a lot of people check out completely when club football stops in this particular break, but not us, Nick. What's caught your eye during the international break? Because we can't go through all the hundreds of matches.
Yeah. Okay. There's plenty. Just one little subplot which I just caught my eye just now was totally forgetting that Louis van Gaal is now the coach of the Dutch national team. All of a sudden, I totally forgot that. Just saw it pop up on my thing, because he just declared the confidence of the Dutch team to that of Formula One driver Max Verstappen, which I thought was just that caught my eye very quickly. The other one that obviously has caught my eye is watching Italy. I mean, after the Euros, how could you not if you're an Italian? But there's a lot of Italians that
have
jumped
that
off, because it's not the Euros right now. But it's been a bit of an interesting two games. They drew with Bulgaria, which was the hangover game, and then against Switzerland, it was an extremely frustrating 0-0. Jorginho is not magical from the spot anymore. He's missed two in a row now. His little hop step has sort of run dry. So there was some issues there. A bit of fatigue, I think, against the Swiss as well. And some players probably should have been rested and whatnot. Obviously playing in the searing heat in Basel. Oh, Basel. Sorry, Basel. Thinking about dinner right now. Basel. in terms of...
No, we're in Switzerland, game, not Italy, Nick.
Yes, yes. But obviously...
We're not playing in Genoa.
Yeah, no, we're definitely not. But
Pesto Genovese.
They've looked okay in most bits, I think. But they've come up against two really good goalkeeper performances. Jan Sommer had like the game of his life against Italy, was saving everything. But most poignant, that sort of stood out, is still their issues. I think, you know, the Immobile experiment, if you want to call it, is definitely run its course. He's playing more like his last name actually suggests when you spell it out in the English language, not the Italian language. Is a far cry from what we've seen at Lazio to start the season as well. So I'd be intrigued for those that want to get up on Thursday morning and watch that game against Lithuania, which should be a win. Whether they look to Moise Keane or if it's Gianluca Scamacca or Giacomo Raspadori who leads the line, some of the young Italian players at the Euros. But yeah, big, big game for them. So in terms of the Euro qualifiers, that's sort of where my attention's been. I've kept an eye, like sort of just checked the results of the other games. Nothing really has caught my eye. What about you, Josh?
Well, the obvious big, big news from the international break, and we alluded to it at the start, was the all-time men's international goal-scoring record being toppled finally by Ronaldo. Ali Daei's very long-standing 111 goals for Iran finally surpassed, and all of the posts from the usual content aggregators followed, lauding the unbelievable statistics of Ronaldo's career, and they are incredible, they are, but if anyone had actually tuned into Portugal versus the Republic of Ireland for the first 89 minutes of the match, they would have had a very different impression of what actually happened in the Algarve, because Ronaldo was absolutely horrendous for 89 minutes.
Yeah.
And Ireland simply, quite simply, should have won that game. There were several blatant penalty calls not given, and injury time way beyond what should have been played. There seemed to be some sort of maybe FIFA incentive or UEFA incentive to make sure that the record was broken in this game. I don't know. Look, I'm not alleging conspiracy.
Yeah, and
but I'm not alleging conspiracy. Well, but you know who did allege conspiracy? It was Didi Hamann on the coverage of the match. He said, "Never in my career have I felt that something was not right. But tonight, for the first time, didn't feel right."
Yeah, I mean, the interesting part of it is that I think the other subplot is it's again been made very apparent that Cristiano Ronaldo and Bruno Fernandes' partnership is not as great as maybe most United fans are thinking. If you even just watch the Euros, the connection between the two is non-existent right now. So I think it's another little subplot to watch going into this weekend when they, I assume, Ronaldo will play his return game for Manchester United this weekend. But I've got to give a quick shout to Gavin Bazunu between the sticks, Josh. I'll tell you what, that's something that Irish fans can definitely hang their hat on. He is a very, very talented young goalkeeper, only 19, on loan at Portsmouth from Manchester City. But it, I think the other sort of, we talk about, you know, sort of Portugal, it's going to be extended, that gap between Ali Daei and Ronaldo, because they're playing Azerbaijan tomorrow morning. And that just is... That is like the perfect dinner for Cristiano Ronaldo, the perfect meal, a minnow team for him to stats pad against. And there's a reason why Serie A fans called him Crotone Man during his time at Juventus, because he just feasted on the minnows. So Crotone Man will soon become probably Norwich Man or Arsenal Man in the next few weeks. So I'm intrigued to see how that plays out. But yeah, Ronaldo... Yeah, look, I can go on all day about how he's not the Cristiano Ronaldo of all.
He still is great at headers at the back post, though. You can't... I mean,
and getting social media metrics.
The other curious aspect of the Ronaldo-Fernandes dynamic is the penalty taking. Because Ronaldo, his recent record is not good. And, of course, Bazunu saved one from the spot, one that would have equaled the record. And of course, he later went and equaled and surpassed it somehow in stoppage time. But... it's clear based on the statistics that Bruno should be taking penalties at United, but will he? Absolutely not, because, you know, ego the size of Old Trafford has just walked into the building. So,
yeah, Edison Cavani's already learned the hard way, already lost his number.
Very gentlemanly of him to pass that on when Neymar wouldn't do the same for Messi. But anyway, we'll get off that stuff and finish on a local note, because MPL Victoria... and indeed, the entire metropolitan Melbourne community football season has been called off. No promotion, no relegation, no champions awarded. And I just think it's a little bit negligent that there was not a contingency plan in place for a points per game system after a certain point of the season, because everybody knew this was a chance. And, you know, it could have been established at the start of the season. It could have been established during one of the many lockdowns that interrupted the season. And we had games behind closed doors and aborted returns to action. I'm hearing that there's still a chance for the Doherty Cup final to be played at some point. But beyond that, we'll have no more football in Victoria. And yet again, it's another lost year for juniors and for all the players, but also for clubs who are looking to climb the tiers of the Victorian system, which, you know, if you're Brunswick City, for example, and you're on a dream run and 8 points clear of your nearest rivals outside of the promotion territory, and now the season's called off, it leaves a bit of a sour taste. And, you know, I think there could have been more creative solutions pursued to leave everybody happy at the end of this season instead of, you know, so much football for all for naught.
I mean, not to go too far down the rabbit hole, but you would have thought that despite, obviously, there are the vaccine targets, you know, the 80% rollout and everything else, but at least I know that there's all these different regulations in with councils and, you know, who's in charge of the ground at different times, more with the metropolitan teams. But you think with NPL Victoria, you could at least try and implement that points per game system. I know that if you want to compare, it's obviously another code. The VFL had that in place. That's obviously the second tier of the AFL. If you want to sort of compare NPL Victoria, VFL, it's probably the best example. And they look to do that in order to ensure that, you know, you sort of even things out so it wasn't completely sort of skewed. Teams have played more games, less games. I do think that they could have done something to at least ensure maybe a small final series, you know, a top four sort of setup, you know, for at least the champions. Because you look at the NPL Victoria standings at how it ended this year. Obviously, Avondale 7 points clear of Oakley Cannons. Like, they would feel extremely aggrieved. You've got still Bentley and Hume up there as well. Now they've got a 3-point gap on Dandenong. But you could come up with some sort of, I don't know, like a playing tournament sort of thing where Bentley and Hume play like a playoff. There's like only one game between them to get into a top four. You do a relegation sort of playoff where you look at the bottom three, St. Albans, let's be real, they're more than likely going down. But you have something to sort of keep Eastern Lions, Altona and Dandy City in with a chance with Eastern Lions to make it just that little bit more interesting, to give them a chance. But also for the tiers, you talk not just about Brunswick City, but NPL 3 as well, you know, the ambitions of teams like Preston, etc. It's just another season where, you know, unfortunately, they've got to build from the ground up. And we know players have ambitions. They want to go and play in different leagues. They want to try and test themselves in the big leagues. And you think Brunswick and Stars at Preston would be looked at by teams in higher tiers and potentially poached. And it's a real shame that we're getting to this point. But then you look at it from the other side, how stiff would it be to be relegated right now? Like, to be relegated in this situation.
Well, let me stop you right there, Nick, because I have a proposed solution that without playing another game would have left everybody, you know, almost satisfied. And that would be if more than half of the games have been played in the competition, which is the case, then premiers are worked out on a points per game basis, which eliminates any sort of games in hand situations. Not champions, because I don't think you can elect a champion when there's a final series in the top flight. But a premier, I think you can, because most of the league season has already been played. Promotion should still happen, but I don't think it's fair to relegate a team if they haven't had the whole season. So I would suggest that there should be promotion with no relegation. And therefore, next season you would have a double relegation to get the numbers back to where they were, if that's your aim. Because then there's only 14 teams in the top flight. I don't think it's a stretch to have a season with 16 teams, even if you have to play a few midweek games to get those games played next year when hopefully we're all vaxxed and everything is rosy.
I'd be curious, Josh, would players be aggrieved playing like a final series in, say, October or November? Like, if there was the chance to award a champion? Like,
I think
players really be against that?
The sense from this was that the clubs didn't want to keep pursuing this because it was just too logistically difficult and they were losing too much money and all that. So it was easier to just cut their losses. But let's talk about Preston as an example, because they're a club that has lost many chances to climb the pyramid. And it happened in 2019 when they were promoted from State League One, but there was a restructure which left them on the same level of the pyramid, the introduction of NPL 3. So by getting promoted, they, along with North Sunshine Eagles and Doveton and so on and so forth, only managed to tread water. And then in 2020, started well, season abandoned. 2021, season abandoned. So that's 3 years in a row that an upwardly mobile club has lost the chance to climb the pyramid. So I would say promotion without relegation this season and then deal with it next year if you want to get the... because they did do a double relegation from NPL 2 when they created the new league. So it's not as if Football Victoria is averse to these kinds of structural rethinks.
Would they go for maybe so 16 in Tier 1, and then obviously you've got to try and shape up NPL 2 and NPL 3. Would you be going potentially just the two top teams, obviously from NPL 2 go up, and then two from NPL 3, and then state leagues, there's NPL 3 and no state league promotion?
I would say you could go all the way down to the state leagues, but only promote the champions. Because
yeah.
Well, if you're going to do it just with the NPL, you could promote the top side from State League 1 Northwest and the top team from State League 1 Southeast. So that's just two in total.
Yeah.
Because obviously it gets regionalised and then it gets more difficult further down the pyramid. But just for NPL, when the stakes are a bit higher and the investment is higher for these clubs, I think it stings a bit more when you've put in so much effort and you deserve to go up, and you probably will, but you don't get that chance. So anyway, that's just my personal opinion, and I'm sure many, many people will disagree with me and say you can't get promoted off, you know, 3/5 of a campaign. But I do think it's delaying what should be an organic, rise to the top of the cream of the crop teams. And this should extend to the women's as well. I mean, there's a new division below MPLW that's been instituted, and two teams have been outstanding, and that's Preston and Burundara Eagles, who've been absolutely brilliant.
Mm.
And the MPLW next season will be poorer for their absence. It's just it's just a fact. I'm a little disappointed that creative solutions to these problems haven't at least been floated. And I don't know what options the clubs were given.
Yeah, like you would have thought that. I know that, you know, there was the great promise at the end of 2020 that we wouldn't have any more lockdowns in 2021. But I guess all competitions around the country should have had a contingency plan for these situations. Just the last ditch right up. Like, all right, worst case scenario, we get halfway during the season, just over it, and we have another outbreak and we have to cancel the season. What are we going to do? Like, what is the
disappointment that there wasn't a plan? And that's
but
the
even not
thing.
At the start, as you said, in the lockdowns, come up with something. There's enough brain power in Football Victoria to come up with something. You'd think that you have something at least ready to go, so you can at least, you know, keep the integrity alive of these competitions and not, you know, not punish teams and unfortunately leave them, you know, sort of leave all their good work sort of unrewarded. You mentioned Preston. And Paco as well, Pasco Val as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's been suggested to me that that there should have been more of a drive to get as many games played as possible. For example, NPL 2 and 3 started several weeks after the top flight. For what reason? I'm not actually sure. Just
Should have started in Feb. Should have started end of Feb, exactly when NPL Victoria.
What's stopping us from playing... I mean, everybody knew that we were going to have another wave of COVID once winter came around. So why weren't we playing more midweek games in the autumn?
Yeah, why did we only have 1 week of midweek fixtures in March? And that was it. Like,
the more you think about it, the more you scratch your head, right? I'm sure there have been similar issues that people would raise in other NPL competitions. Obviously, Victoria is the one we're most familiar with, so we're using that as the case study. But I would love people from MPLs in New South Wales, for example, that's been called off to get
in
touch
and
tell us
as well.
Tell us how it's been dealt with. We know New South Wales is completely null and void, and how they would like to have seen the situation dealt with. Because I held out maybe naive hope for some sort of summer league involving NPL clubs who have access to their grounds all year round. Obviously, they didn't want to do that, but I still think there is a way you can make these disappointed teams feel like their efforts have been rewarded without anyone really losing out. And that is
absolutely
promotion, no relegation. So
Anyway,
that's my little rant for this Tuesday evening. It's been a delight to have you back with me, Nick, on Twilight Football. And we're going to be doing this every week on a Tuesday throughout lockdown. And we'll see if we add more programming beyond that. But of course, you know, without a studio, it's a little more difficult.
Work.
I'm like an octopus back here trying to run the live streams. But we're also got our watch along from 10 p.m., which is a lot of fun, and we're going to have Joey joining us for that as well. So make sure you tune in to us and to the Socceroos fixture tonight. We'll speak to you again very soon.